Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour on this Saturday, March 8th, 2014, of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And here we are, and you are there, and the telephone numbers to call are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Seems like there was something I was going to talk about. Oh, yeah. One of the there's a general rule here, and that I wanted to talk about with regard to education. You know, this is the financial planner kind of guy sitting over here. One of the things that's happening in the country, by the way, there was a, and this is triggered, by the way, by a really good article in the Wall Street Journal, the Wall Street Journal today, that the pace of student borrowing slowed for the third straight year. Isn't that wonderful?
Wonderful.
In 2013, in January, there was $37 billion of new debt, and this year we're only $28 billion of new debt in student loans.
Still too much.
Oh, man, is it ever too much. The point is that there is a serious error, and there's another article in here on a separate subject that is so right on, and that is that this is if you look at the employment data report that came out, healthcare over the last year has net added about zero jobs.
Yep.
Yet there are hordes of people, that's probably a bit large, a bunch.
You're using all these technical words.
Large quantities of people who are attending school.
I just say a number of people are attending school.
A large number of people are attending schools across the country that have sprung up because of the fact that there's an assumption that the medical field is one that's always hiring. This could go on forever. The wages go up, the job security is great, therefore we can afford to borrow a lot of money to get a certificate or a degree or something where we can go into the medical field and we will be assured of a good, high-paying job. Unfortunately, that is not the truth. Nurses, and I was a little surprised to see this in the report, followed up on it. Apparently, we're producing more nurses than the medical system can hire right now. Yet, we still have a very large percentage, a large number of people who are planning or are entering into education for the purpose of becoming nurses. This is one of those serious errors that we make in the nation. We make economically, just as we did with the housing mortgage crisis. The investors who were buying the mortgage securities looked at the past and said, housing always goes up, prices of housing always goes up, therefore we can afford to take this garbage bonds.
You got all this good stuff where you build all these great ideas on a really, really bad foundation.
And the point is, we tend to extend these trends forever. And one of the crucial elements, and I talked last hour a little bit about the longer your planning horizon, the smarter you are about this stuff, is to seriously don't go with what your high school counselor says or whatever. And I presume that there's probably not very many high school students listening to this program, but if you have children or grandchildren or you have somebody you can influence who's a young person and they're going to go to school, because that's pretty critical. And there's another number there that's very, very important. People with a bachelor's degree have very, 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 very low unemployment right now. Sometimes it's not the employment they want, but they're not unemployed. Whereas people who don't get a bachelor's degree have a much higher unemployment rate and are financially sinking gradually over time. So now it takes two workers in a household to get the kind of income that one worker in a household where you've got an advanced degree is getting. But the key here is to look at whatever occupation and set, and not make the assumption, whatever a person is, first off, when they go to school, you're going to borrow the money particularly, it's crucial to make sure that the education will prepare you for and usher you into an occupation where you can make, where you, A, you can get hired, and B, you can make a good living for a long time.
I have something to add here. I have for a long time thought about this, and I think this is the first time I'm stating it publicly. I believe that it would be in the best interest of everyone involved before a student loan is given, if the student comes up with a business plan type document that
yes.
says, this is how I intend to pay this back.
Absolutely.
And recognizing at that point that this is, if they project even really good case scenario and they look at the amount of money, the amount, the percentage of their income that they will need to pay into the student loans to pay it back off, it may let them realize that a degree in advanced basket weaving is probably not the best method of going to college. Now, nursing doesn't fall in that category.
Well, it can.
It can. Recognizing that something that a decade ago or even 5 years ago was a really good idea to learn about may not be a good idea now is pretty important. 5 years to those of us that are adults doesn't seem like that long, but that's the whole length plus some of high school. If the whole length of their high school, they're looking at what people did before they were in high school as a good idea, they're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah, and there's, let me give you an example. There's two things here. One is the idea that people believe they need to go to, a lot of people believe they need to send their children to a major four-year university, have them borrow the money for the major four-year university rather than 2 years of community school, community college, which now they call something else.
Right. And then going on to get the degree at a right. four-year college for just 2 years.
And then the issue is, at a minimum, look at the school, talk to the people at the school, and talk to the career counselors at the school you're interested in attending, and say, where are you getting people hired before they even graduate, and in what fields are you having people where they really have to look for work?
I mean,
now that's still 4 years away when you start, but your first 2 years can be basics. You don't have to choose a career path for until the second 2 years of school. The other thing, and I'm going to drop a little punchline in here, and it needs to be updated because my data here is about 2 years old. Texas State Technical College up in Waco, TSTC, has a reputation in a whole series of their particular job titles that they educate people for, of having their graduates already with a secure job 6 months to a year before they graduate. All they have to do is graduate with a reasonable grade point average, and they go straight to a good job. They're in the business and always have been in the business of adjusting their, they used to be TSTI, I think, it used to be the Technical Institute or something, but now it's a college. You do get a degree out of there. But they are focusing on long-term critical professions, or not professions, sometimes it's professions, more often it's occupations, trades, where there is going to be a need into the foreseeable future. One of the key things to pay attention to is the trend in any occupation or any professional area. For instance, medical. We all saw for years the prices rose and rose and rose, and it's written all over the place in the news media and in the magazines that the price of medical care has got to be cut. And the biggest expense in medical care are the people.
Yeah.
And that's called the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah. When this comes back to what we were just talking about, the medical plan, as long as almost every student that applies for student loans gets approved, we have a problem. That's the same sort of thing that was happening in the mortgage world when we had the bubble in the housing industry.
Right.
That anybody that went, no matter if they could pay it back or not, got approved. Now, we have this tendency to say, but this is education. Everyone should get an education. Don't get me wrong. I think education is the purest form of investing. I think that the whole concept of what you can do with an education is important. I also think that buying a house is a good idea. It doesn't mean that everybody needs to buy a house. Recognizing what you're doing in education is far more important than the education itself. If you get a bunch of knowledge about something that will never earn you any money, you've just wasted all that money and you have no ability to pay it back. Or if you do pay it back, it's at a huge disadvantage to yourself and your family for the next 30 years. This is obviously a soapbox that we can both be on for quite some time.
But it's just so important that you don't go blindly into these things. And it is so important that you look at a way to do it economically and efficiently. Today, let me give you another example. A lot of people are just kind of cruising along at this point in this local area. Heard a guy say the other day that how proud he was that he invested in real estate around here and was really happy with the rental houses he had and so on, and that's fine. I said, what do you think about Chuck Hagel's announcement the other day? And he said, he looked at me like I had gone crazy or something, and he said, what are you talking about? When the Secretary of Defense says that we're going to cut 100,000 people out of the Army, and you're living around an Army post that's the only one that has two or more divisions on it in the United States Army, and you take into account that closing an Army post takes an act of God and three letters from your congressman, or at least an act of Congress, which probably won't happen, where are there Army posts in the United States where you could cut a significant quantity of the people and still leave the post open? And you get a very, very, very short list. Once you get that list all calculated out, you notice there are about a dozen places that you could do that, but only one of them is located a long ways from where the troops would deploy and is incapable of training the soldiers on that particular post at the post. They have to go someplace else to train. Wonder which one that would be.
There's only really one.
Then it's Fort Hood. And when you cut a soldier from Fort Hood, there's at least, for every 10 soldiers you cut from Fort Hood, there will probably be two or three civilian jobs cut on Fort Hood. If we believe that the Secretary of Defense was accurate in his statement of the fact that we simply can't afford to keep this many people in the armed forces, it will bankrupt the country, then you probably, if you look at the budget issues and you look at the retirement issues in the military and everything else that's going on, you realize this is a fiscal reality. This is not something that is political. This is not something that we can brush under the rug and say, if I write my congressman, it'll get fixed. There was an attempt early this year to scale back the costs of retirement, military retirement,
which was
absolutely
late last year. Okay. The budget that was approved at the the last minute, and then it went into effect, and people said, "Wait a minute, we're lowering benefits," and by lowering benefits, it means that their rates weren't going up with cost of living,
right?
And veterans.
And the point is that, very frankly, as long as the military can retire at 20 years, and basically for some people, folks, that's, 20 years for a lot of them is 48 years old.
Some of them, it is 38 years old.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, 38 years. I'm sure you're right. 38 years old. You can retire at 38 years old and draw an income for the rest of your life that will be many multiples
of what you earned while you were in service.
Yeah, of what the person was paid on active duty. We will come to the point where we cannot afford to have soldiers defending the country.
All right. This is a subject that we get a lot of flack on.
But wait a minute. Let me take this one step further.
Uh-huh.
That was knocked down. And when that happened, when the idea of trimming the retired pay just until they turn 62 of retired working soldiers who have a second career, putting them in the same status, by the way, by cutting out inflation adjustments as teachers.
Yeah.
When that was knocked down, the additional expense was so great that is back into the budget now that something has to happen, and it is no coincidence that the Secretary of Defense says, okay,
we have to cut the military.
We're going to cut 100,000 jobs from the Army.
Yeah, this is the thing. I was mentioning this.
But let me give one more thing here.
Let you finish it. Go ahead.
That is going to have a profound impact on the county in the United States that has the highest net inflow of federal dollars as a percent in the United States and happens to have the largest military installation in the United States located on it.
Bell County.
That's Bell County, Texas.
What he just said was not a statement of political belief. He was talking about economics. Personally, if you asked either of us about veteran benefits, both of us would say there is no way that you can earn it more thoroughly than by fighting for your country. That's not what's being discussed right now. What's being discussed right now is economic reality. There's two worlds here. Either one of us is going to say every veteran deserves everything they can possibly get out of this. They've put their lives at stake. When it comes to the economic reality of Congress as it exists, of the United States as it exists, the vast majority of Congress has not served in the military. That's a statement of fact. The vast majority of Congress doesn't know which side of a tank is the front if you turn the turret.
That is literally, yes, absolutely. I've seen newspaper articles. They show a picture of a tank from the rear saying it's the front because the turret is pointed to the rear.
Right. So recognizing the degree of ignorance that the vast majority of the voting population has, recognizing all of that and looking at the fact that a 38-year-old can have a full retirement benefit from the military while working at another job, when last hour we were talking about Social Security, people have been paying into this for 40-plus years, and they get it at a lowered rate, and there's all kinds of complications involved in getting it, recognize that there are things that are on the chopping block. When you talk about whether or not Social Security will exist into the future, one of the things that comes into the conversation now on a regular basis in Congress is benefits to the military. We're not saying this is a good thing. We're not saying it's a bad thing. Personally, I think it's a disservice to the military. But that's not what we do this program on. We do this program in order to plan for the future, looking at the reality of who's in Congress, looking at the reality of public opinion. If you just say, no, it's not a good idea and it happens anyway and you haven't planned for it, then you've just completely ignored all of your military training. If your military training says plan for the worst and you don't apply it to your daily life, then you're going to put yourself in trouble. That's what we're talking about right now.
And a lot of people are going to have a lot of trouble believing this. As a matter of fact, I've talked to people who just simply said it'll never happen.
That's like going into battle saying that the enemy is never going to do what you don't expect them to.
It's like the fellow who called here a couple of weeks ago and said that he just put a bunch of money into an indexed annuity with a company and that the Congress would never allow the companies to fail.
They did it with Lehman Brothers. They did it with Bear Stearns. Right. They've done it with a lot of big companies.
And factually, the fact that we didn't allow companies to fail this time, and I'm going to say this.
Generally, the whiplash is next time they all fail.
Right. You can write this down. The next time around, we're going to probably follow history. In 1907, the federal government, under Teddy Roosevelt, stepped in and bailed out the banking industry temporarily.
Morgan Stanley had a big chunk of person, not the company. But, had a lot to do with that as well.
J.P. Morgan.
J.P. Morgan, I'm sorry.
But federal money, huge quantity. We borrowed money from Great Britain to do the job in 1907. The president did on his own word. Basically, on his word, gold from Great Britain for the purpose of keeping the banking industry from failing in 1907. In 1929, we had a conservative Congress and we had a conservative president who didn't believe in that sort of thing. We had sort of a Rand Paul sort of guy as president, Herbert Hoover, an engineer. Because of what happened in 1907, he chose not to bail out the banking industry in 1929, and so
let's give the logic here real quick. If you just so hold your spot,
okay.
If we use a couple of examples of what's just happened, we spent a lot of money with TARP, and the system didn't collapse. So did we waste the money by spending it? Because it didn't collapse, so that money seems like, you know, an even better example is Y2K. Think of all the money that went into preventing Y2K from happening, and then it was a non-event. All of that panic and all that money spent, and nothing happened. Well, it's really easy to look at that and say that money was wasted. Mm-hmm. Or you can look at it from the other perspective of, if that money hadn't been spent, maybe there would have been a disaster.
But that is so hard for a person who doesn't believe the government should be involved in things.
Right.
You know, and you think that this couldn't possibly happen, but folks, it's happening from a much shorter perspective. Warren Buffett this week warned that local and state financial problems are accelerating in large part because public entities promised pensions they couldn't afford.
It's the same thing that happened at General Motors and at Chrysler.
And there's several cities in right now, Stockton and others, some of which have already gone through bankruptcy.
Detroit's a big example, obviously.
Well, Detroit, and this is the interesting thing about Detroit. Detroit has chosen, and the courts have actually forced them into this position. They're basically going to pay the pensions, but the investors who bought bonds from Detroit are going to get back maybe 20 cents on the dollar. The
which
same
is a
thing,
really bad precedent.
Which is the same thing that's happening in California, by the way. The unions are insisting on keeping their pay, their retirement. The government employees are insisting on keeping their retirement. The bondholders are getting back pennies on the dollar. This is, you can write this one down. Down the road, they will have a second bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Then they will have to cut those pension benefits phenomenally because nobody will loan them the money to pay the pensioners. Now,
because you didn't pay the loan. The people that gave the loans to begin with didn't get paid back, so they're not going to do it again.
And here is the crisis point that I want to point out here. Look around the country and see at what age firefighters and police officers retire. It's modeled on the military. They retire at 30 to sometimes as early as in their 30s, but generally in their 40s or by 50, they retire. And they have a relatively generous defined benefit pension plan.
That's dragging down
Illinois,
the municipalities.
Could face bankruptcy. Chicago, by the way, is potentially facing bankruptcy over this. What other governmental entity in the United States has a whole lot of people who retire in their 30s or 40s and get a pension for the rest of their life plus full health care?
Now, let's come at this from another perspective here real quick, because that's a good point that you've just said. In the military, you are taught to think about goals, about what the motivation of the enemy is and what your motivation is, thinking strategically. If you apply that rationale to exactly this situation, what is the purpose of the United States military?
To pay its retirees.
Oh, no, wait a minute, because that's what's happening. We've already passed the point where retirees are getting paid more than active duty military. And in the not too far distant future, we're talking about 10 years, the entire defense budget will be less than what is being paid to retirees.
No, retirees will be over half the defense budget. Because the defense budget has within it the retiree pay, so it can't be less than
veterans.
The retiree pay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the actual defense budget, right. Not Veterans Affairs.
Right.
So when I say defense budget, I'm not talking about Veterans Affairs.
Well, let me say that the defense, until you hit age 62, the retired people in the military
get paid out of the defense.
That's out of defense. And fundamentally, what Jake is saying, we can afford as a percentage of our gross domestic product a certain amount of money to spend on defense. If we spend more than that, it doesn't work. We go bankrupt.
Now,
and if you took the entire percentage of the gross domestic product of the United States we're spending on defense right now, it's going to take that much somewhere down the road just to pay the retirees.
And you can get upset at us. People have quite often gotten upset at us when we bring this stuff up. You can get upset at us, but it's the same thing that is getting upset at somebody that says the enemy has a lot of troops. It has a lot more troops than we thought they did. You don't get upset at that person. You instead start planning on the fact that the enemy has a lot of troops. In your case, if you are a military retiree or a soldier of some sort, start planning now to know that the benefits that you have come to expect, that the Congress said are yours by legal right, all it takes is an act of Congress to change an act of Congress. Mm-hmm. If you don't plan for it, you're going to get blindsided. I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm not saying that Congress has got all the, they're such a good group. In fact, I don't think that you will ever hear me say that. But the reality on the ground is that if you expect Congress to look for your best interests, no matter who you are, you're probably looking at the wrong group.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Okay, you two little chicken littles there hollering about the sky going to fall. Let me ask you something.
Okay.
We're
not chicken littles and the sky's not going to fall.
No, we're not.
Okay, well, good. You just relieve my mind a lot.
Okay.
You're not for annuities. You're saying that it looks like, to listen to y'all, that the state, local, and even the federal government is going to go bankrupt.
Nope.
Nope.
Didn't say that.
Not saying that.
Where in the heck does somebody invest in the stock market? You can't trust it. So where in the world does somebody put their money to be protected in the future without losing it all?
Well, wait a minute. We didn't say the federal government was going to go bankrupt.
Nope.
We didn't say the state was going to go bankrupt. No, they're going to cut benefits down the road. It's the same thing with the nurses, the people who are flooding into into schools to get nursing certificates thinking that they're going to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the hospital, the medical system said, we aren't going to go bankrupt. And the federal government said, we're not going to go bankrupt. So we're going to cut money in this area over here. And these people are lined up having committed themselves and spent a lot of money and borrowed a lot of money to take a job that's not there. Well, the same thing is true. This is personal planning. The government of the United States is not going to go bankrupt. We're actually in very, very good shape. But there's some very, very clear issues out there. And it's written all over the place once you step back and look at it. And that is that when you have a system that would bankrupt the federal government if it was left unchanged, and the federal government can change it, they're going to change it.
Yeah, you asked a specific question.
Well, I have no faith in that, the way two parties are loggerheads all the time, right? I can't hardly see them doing anything until the guns held to both their heads.
Well, they did it. I hate to break this to you, but
they've been doing a lot of compromise in the last year and a half.
They have done, in the midst of all the yelling and screaming and caterwauling that goes on up there, take a look at where the deficit was a few years ago and where it is today. Take a look at where taxes are. Taxes have risen. Expenses and the
spending is down.
Spending as a percentage of gross domestic product is down. In other words, the compromises are occurring, they're just not showing up in the newspaper.
Now, you asked a question, and it was a really good question. What do I do? That's
right.
The question that needs...
I don't have as much faith in the government surviving as you do. Where does somebody put the money to make sure they're safe and it's not lost?
You put it where there's utility.
Okay, that brings up another question I'll ask. About a month ago, you talked highly, and you didn't recommend it, but you talked highly of AT&T. And I looked
No. We use it as an example.
Hold on.
One company.
I don't know if the telephones in here are problematic, but a lot of times people can't hear us when they're talking on the telephone. We spoke about AT&T as an example of a company.
Right.
We say often, we do not and will not ever say that it's a good idea to buy an individual stock. We don't do it. We don't want people to do it.
Right. No, I know that. I'm just saying that what do you do with your money? Where do you put it to make sure it is safe?
I'm going to answer your question, okay? And I'm going to answer it very straightforward. You set up a broadly diversified asset allocation plan using securities. And that, I realize those are terms that are hard for a lot of people to understand because they don't even understand what broadly diversified meant, and asset allocation is right off the scale. But the bottom line to it is really quite simple. If you are well diversified across the economy and you have an allocation across different classes of securities, as well as across the whole nation geophysically and industrially, you are as secure as you're going to get in this universe, because what you've done is you have invested in the broad economy of the United States of America, and the fact is it would take the entire economic system to fail for you to lose all your money. Now, does that mean you're not going to see things that will scare you?
There are going to be things. The market does go down.
You're going to see short-term market moves up and down. The thing you should be concerned about is believing when you invest in something that is guaranteed and has a higher return than a CD at the bank that you're safe, because you're not by definition.
This is exactly what we're talking about up to here. When you put money into an institution and that institution says, we have your money and it's all safe and no fluctuations are going to happen to the money, you have to look at the institution itself and what fluctuations are happening there. If you're talking about an annuity company, you're talking about a life insurance company. You look at the stock value of that company. How close is that company to failure? If you're talking about the United States government, you have to look at the decisions that they're going to make that will change the things that they've said to you before. There are lots of things that you can do with the money, but trying to remove yourself from any risk doesn't work.
Well, you can. You can remove yourself from the risk of the market moving up and down by getting a zero return on your money.
Right. You can go to the bank. And if you go to enough banks and you have a large portfolio, you get a very safe position. But you're not going to get through your life unless you have a lot of money without spending it.
Yeah, unless your name is Ross Perot, that won't work.
Yeah, so there are ways of doing this, and we talk about it. We talk about looking at the broad world, looking at the economy of the United States, and not investing in one spot. And we just, you know, you brought up the word AT&T. AT&T is a great company. Don't get us wrong. But if you invest all your money in AT&T and one person messes it up, one person somewhere in the company of AT&T sends out the wrong email or trips over the wrong cord and shuts down something improperly, or the government sues it, or there are uncountable things that could happen, then AT&T stops being a good company. Yeah, if you instead get well diversified across lots of areas and you use asset allocation, long term, you're still going to have risks, but they're risks that you can look at and see at any given moment instead of somebody putting a blindfold over your eye and saying, don't worry about it, we got it taken care of.
So, the
personal responsibility.
The answer is that, is the government safe? Yeah. Every time you handle a dollar bill, you're relying upon the government to guarantee the value of that dollar bill, and they will do that. The whole Federal Reserve is standing behind that piece of paper you have in your hand. And it works. It has worked for a couple hundred years now, and I think it's going to continue. There's no evidence. We're getting a lot better at it. On the other hand, if you blindly grab hold of a promise that you think somebody made to you, who generally, by the way, was not authorized to make the promise,
And you think of Congress, most of the people that made the promise aren't even there anymore.
You know, again, we talk about that guy who called in. I did some calculations on the numbers that he gave us on the air. And that company, if in fact was promising him the returns that he gave me, said that, in essence, they said that the amount of money, the amount of return they're going to have to make is somewhere between 8 and 10% a year, which an insurance company probably will not be able to do over an extended period of time. So thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And the reason why we do this program is to let people know, one, they're told a lot of things that aren't necessarily true, and two, there's a lot of things that you can do to prepare yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That personal responsibility is what we're preaching right here.
What I've told people who are retiring at 20 years or 25 years or 30 years and are going to have a full-time career from that moment forward, literally, I have said to them over and over again, and if you have done this, invest every penny you get in your military retirement until you turn full retirement age.
It may be that at some point you're fine and the government doesn't cut your pay, but it also may be the other way around, in which case you're sitting pretty.
And the point is, if you got money in a bankrupt system, you probably ought to do something about that. Anyway, we got a caller again on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the nursing that you were talking about.
Right.
Okay.
The biggest thing that happened with nursing was when the economy turned bad, a lot of the women who had dropped out of nursing to go back home and raise kids, all of a sudden husbands out of work or having to work at Walmart, so all the nurses went back into the job market.
Correct. Well, that's part of it.
That's part of it, but also the net number of nursing jobs in the United States for the last 2 years has not increased significantly.
Not yet, but what's going to happen in 15 years is that these women in their 40s that went back to work are not going to be able to work the hardcore floor jobs, IM and RN, that the hospitals require, and those jobs are going to start opening up.
But 15 years from now is a long time for somebody who just graduated from nursing school.
Right.
Absolutely. But the biggest, I'll tell you, the biggest service you can do to anybody is there are a whole group of schools, quote-unquote, out there, where you sign up with them. They give you a free computer, and they give you a certificate, and you go to correspondence classes, and all of a sudden you get a certificate in veterinary, or you get a certificate in working in a pharmacy, or
right.
you get the nursing aide.
Absolutely.
And those things are not worth a dime
because
you had practical experience and no clinicals. And they're targeting the enlisted wives out here, and they're targeting them heavy.
And you are completely correct. If you don't do – this is what we were talking about. If you don't do research – and determine from that school what percentage of people are directly employed quickly in whatever area they're trained in, then you're just wasting your money. And people, unfortunately, are not well prepared in the education system to do long-term planning.
People like to hear everything's taken care of. You get this certificate and look at what it'll do for you. You need to follow up and make sure that that is reality and not just hot air.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I hate to say it, but a lot of our enlisted people's spouses are not that sophisticated in a lot of this, and they take what these people promise, which is a rainbow, and all they get is a pot of paint.
And they borrow a bunch of money to do it.
Yeah.
Either that or the government is, you know, the government pays for a lot of these spouses, not just wives, but male spouses too, like myself. Pays for us to go back to school and get an RN, a two-year RN. But they also pay for those schools that are junk. And why the government is paying for those junk schools, knowing they're junk schools, drives me crazy.
It's
the same thing with loans.
Right.
People to get worthless pieces of paper.
I completely understand what you're saying, and I completely agree with you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the call. We've got some commercials to play.
All right, thank you.
When we're back, if you would like to join the program, you can call us locally at
773-1400.
Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back after these critically important words from KTEM's sponsors. And And we're back with the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we have a caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach.
You
go ahead.
Turn their knob up. There you go.
Yeah, there you are. Go ahead now. Now go ahead. Are you there?
Hello. I'm here.
Yes. All right. Okay.
I just wanted to say, because you're talking about college and all, I just learned that my daughter, she finally graduated from, I think it was North Arizona University.
Mm-hmm. Northern Arizona, yeah.
Right. And
it's at Flagstaff.
She did her classes basically online.
Yeah.
So that was easy for her.
Well, it all depends. What degree did she get?
She was trying to go for a different degree, but she got hers, a bachelor's in science.
Okay, well, a bachelor's of science, but the point is, can she get a job with it?
Well, she's got a job right now, and it's paying her $10 an hour, and she works for the VA. But what's interesting is that she's got a $60,000 education loan to pay back.
Right. She's getting $10 an hour with a bachelor's degree?
Wow. Mm-hmm. She needs to be applying to other positions, depending on what the bachelor's...
Therein is the problem. That's, you know, the president has said minimum wage should be 10-10. She's making below minimum wage with a bachelor's degree.
What's interesting is that she has been told that if she works for the government for 10 years, then they will just, just wipe off that.
Oh,
yeah. Well, student loan forgiveness.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, at $10 an hour, I hope so.
Yeah, because 10 years of $80,000 at $80,000 with no interest on the debt, that's just $8,000 extra a year, which is not a lot of money.
Yeah, $10 an hour, that's an awful lot of work. Yeah, and that is the problem, unfortunately, with many online classes. You get a degree, and in some governmental jobs, they give you an automatic raise if you get a degree. They used to do that in teaching, but that's going away very quickly because then they realized people were getting online classes. They weren't actually learning a great deal.
They just got a certificate. Yeah.
And as a result, the pay increases that they were depending on are disappearing. The government is, let's put it like this. I recently knew somebody who got a master's degree thinking that they would get a government job. They were actually working for the government,
mm-hmm.
and promised basically that, okay, if you get a master's degree, we'll raise your pay to this. Well, guess, and when they got to that point, the job was eliminated. So they not only did she not get a raise.
She didn't get a job to
She was unemployed.
So let's go back to something. And by the way, thank you for the call.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
The idea about what is a degree that will allow you to have a job into the future, that changes. There isn't a degree that you can say, this one always works, just like you can't say real estate always goes up in value. You have to customize the degree to the student and the student's interests and make sure that it's flexible into the future. A lot of technology degrees are that way, but there's other alternatives as well, and I've mentioned this on the air before. Singularity University in California is a non-accredited university that has 100% employment rate on exit, and the rate of pay is quite a lot higher than even your normal bachelor's. And that's based on a very flexible education system. And I'm not saying everybody should go to Singularity University, so don't get me wrong there. What I'm saying is that their education criteria changes with moment-to-moment data. If there's a new piece of technology, that's what they're learning. And it isn't a four-year college. There's a lot of other stuff involved there, and it's kind of hard to get into. But if you apply the concept of that, and if you're a parent out there and you have a kid that is looking at colleges right now, don't say, what's a career that's going to make you a lot of money and let's choose that. Instead, look at the interest. What is this child interested in? Find good interests there. Then decide, what is it that in that area, in that field, that will allow them to make a good living?
Good aptitude is important. Now, I would say aptitude rather than interest, because in my opinion, at least, a lot of time a child doesn't know what they're going to be interested in.
Well,
But if they're given a good set of aptitudes.
I'm not talking about careers. I'm talking about way before the career. Okay. What are they interested
right.
in?
Right. And what I'm saying is that one of the issues that we run into, at least my experience, is that an awful lot of students right now who I say this because we had a lot of job applicants and I got to talk to them and they had some very interesting degrees. They got degrees in something that was interesting and was relatively easy. Relatively. And developed a bit and then discovered that they didn't have the skills necessary to be gainfully employed and pay back those loans. It really boils down to the fact that you look, Jake was saying something you're interested in, look down the road and say, where is there employment that's likely to continue into the future? I was talking to a young lady the other day who was at a checkout counter. And I asked her what she was going to do, and she said she was going to become an ultrasound technician. And the point is, I said, that can be replaced by a computer. And she was shocked and didn't think it was a good idea. I told her, you want to go into the medical field, there are some places where you're more likely to be employed. One of them is physical therapy. Physical therapy takes, a lot of education. B, it's hard work. It's not necessarily very much fun, but the people get paid. Another one is speech therapy. Again, it takes a specialized education. It's an education that's hard to get. It involves some really, really, really hard work when you get to the hospital. Guess what? They pay people more for that type of thing than they do for doing something that's easy.
Well, speech therapy, though, is something that generally requires a master's degree.
And that's another thing. To take this one step further, as an employer, having now talked to a lot of other employers and a lot of people who hire people who aren't directly employers, apparently there's a lot of ways you can get a master's degree without doing a thesis.
Sure.
Absolutely. If somebody gets a master's degree and they didn't do a thesis, odds are, unless it's in a specialty area like engineering or something, even in speech therapy, a lot of times they do a thesis. But if it's not in a technical area that is very, very difficult, if they didn't do the thesis, like an MBA without a thesis, that and $1.50 will get you a cup of coffee almost anywhere. But the bottom line,
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah.
The original writing skills, if a person's going to be in business, the original thinking and writing skills that are involved in writing an original paper and doing it right and getting all the facts exactly right are probably the big issue in a master's degree. But a lot of schools have dumbed down their program where you just take a bunch of courses, you do a lot of multiple choice tests, and you get a degree. And we're on our soapbox again.
I
am.
I was trying to end on an upbeat thing about finding a path, and hopefully that will stick. If you look at the interests of your kid and then you spend the time looking at the interests long enough to know that it's a pretty good interest, whether it's art or there's all kinds of things. And when you say, well, what is art? How is that? Well, designing things in a CAD program is going to be a major profession. Right. It already is, but it's going to be even bigger. 3D programming or 3D printing is a huge thing on the horizon. And if you can take an interest in art and turn it into designing three-dimensional models, you have the ability to do something that vast majorities of the United States cannot do.
I had a son, still have a son, who liked to play and still likes to play video games.
He's a programmer.
Now he develops video games. But the point is, it was a hard course, but he wanted to do it, and we supported him in it, and we kept pushing and supporting, and he got to do it. So you think, well, the kid just sits around and plays video games. So you're right. Whatever they're interested in.
Find the interest,
but there's hard work there.
You've got to recognize the work comes with it. But if they're interested in it and they're good at it to begin with, then it's a lot easier to stick to it.
And we're about out of time. This has been the Personal Wealth Coach, for those of you who haven't figured this out. And if you'd like to contact us off the air and leave a message for us this weekend, there'll be human beings there during the week. You can call 947-1111, or
you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Again, that's voicemail. You can reach us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Leave us messages there, listen to podcasts. But again, warnings about sanity and such. If you listen too long, you may start to sound as crazy as we do.
So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.